coming to you live from inside the globe, perched high atop the Bugle Planet building in sunny Gotham City. It's Hey Kids Comics with two guys who are always ready to seduce the innocent, your hosts, Andrew Farmer and the Jedi Cole Houston. And now it's time for Hey Kids Comics.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome back to Hey Kids Comics. You have found us punchy and road-worn at the end of a long story arc involving a great many players. Everybody from Kelly Long to Weldon, Eddie, Steve, God bless his kind soul for once again coming on and letting us just...
How good of him to, yes, make the yet another appearance.
But tonight, we close out the story arc with...
Well, we asked the inevitable question, how about some more bees, Mr. Taggart? I'd say you've had enough.
If all goes well at this point, and we know we're releasing this late, but if all goes well at this point, you will be hearing the crackling fire, the crackling sounds of the campfire under this podcast as we sit around at the base of Devil's Tower and swap stories of Western comic books.
Yeah, this here is going to be us just a bunch of tumbling tumbleweeds across the Great Prairie upon which man may make his stand against nature and man himself and eke out a living.
Listen,
on his own terms.
Sometimes you eat the podcast, sometimes the podcast eats you.
Yes, indeed, and nothing could be more true than this week with this. This is the Wild Wild Best.
It's so good.
And we are going to talk about feudal Japan, of course.
Of course.
No, that's the Wild Wild East, apparently.
It's a different west. Everything is west if you go far enough.
Oh, that's
all right.
So true. But that's the period we forgot to include in this arc, but we're kind of slavish to the 5-issue arc, so there you have it. But we are very fortunate because we have a brand new first-time guest on the show.
So excited.
We have a bit of a greenhorn for the Hey Kids Comics, but I don't even know that much about the genre in general. I mean, in any media, but I'm going to play every little bit of anything I know.
That's right.
But we have with us none other than also a newcomer to the Games and Theory Department for AllCon and upcoming FinnaCon, none other than the show host Sean Padilla.
That's right.
Thank you so much.
That's right.
Thank you for joining us very last minute and proving yourself before the show to be an even better and better and better choice than we had imagined.
And as we informed you prior, much like Freaks, you are one of us now. So
true.
So you've got 6 months to develop your own podcast.
We accept you. One of us.
That's right.
One of us.
So you have 6 months before you develop your own podcast. You have no choice in this matter now.
That's
it will
right.
happen. Thank you for
but
joining
if you need a place to park said podcast, may I recommend the Jedi Cole Universe at JediCole.com, where we anticipate the triumphant return of What'd You Think with Mrs. Jedi Cole and new host Stephen Fett from the Rancor Pit Live.
So excited. All right, so let's get into this. Let's tame the Wild West tonight, gentlemen. You know, I've got a little history about what would be considered the beginning, and it dovetails very nicely, something I hadn't considered, it dovetails very nicely into what's going to be our next issue of Hey Kids Comics, is that when these, we don't consider the independent comic creator prior to the conglomeration of the big two, or now the big three or the big four, that get their piece of the pie, but when these comics were first released, they were released by, you know, you had your Fawcetts and you had your Marvels. They got in pretty early, but Centaur Publications released what could be the first of the comic, the Wild West actual standalone comic books way back in 1936. So that with Star Ranger. They became Cowboy Comics later. Yeah. Yeah. It's pretty amazing that they go back that far in this form. But of course, quickly, you move now. Now I have a general question for you. The very popular time, the dreaded golden age of Western comics fell right in between 1946-47 and then right up to the 60s. Is there something special about that time period that would lend itself to Western comics or cowboy comics in general that you guys can put a finger on?
World War II vets come and wanting to re-embrace the American ideal.
Ooh, there it is. Man, coming wow. in hot. Coming in hot. No, but yeah, that's a big deal, right? Because it's the everyman hero. Everybody, I'm not going to say everybody, but the majority, you know, World War II was a time when everybody got to be, they were welcomed as heroes, they returned as heroes. The everyman hero, as the superhero waned, cowboy comics became a thing that was very popular. So I think that's a very good estimation of why, right? What are our, go ahead, Cole, you got something.
I also feel like that, the door was wide open for the Wild West, because that is a genre that is becoming increasingly popularized in motion pictures.
Right.
Much later in television. You know, as period pieces go, the American Wild West, the Untamed West, call it what you will, it belongs to us, unlike any other
yes.
period.
Yes.
As Americans, we own the Western genre. Because there wasn't a hell of a lot going on in the U.S. during the medieval period in Europe.
Correct.
When the ancient Egyptians were building the pyramids.
You don't know that. Call Eddie. Call Colleen. You don't know
that. Oh, yeah. Or the ancient aliens were building the pyramids for them.
Prove to me that the ancient aliens didn't build the pyramids. That's all I'm saying. Prove the onus is on you for that, Cole. Stop saying things you
okay.
can't back up.
Burden of proof is mine.
Burden of proof is yours take. For that.
But, you know, there aren't anything for Americans. Most of the other top periods in which to place fantasy or dramatic tales occurred overseas.
Yeah, for sure. You're and when definitely. You talk when I'm sorry, Sean, you can go ahead, man.
No, I was agreeing. Definitely.
Yeah. Cole does that. You end up agreeing with him whether you want to or not. That's just his way. But Cole, you've talked in every issue, and here's an interesting thing. Every issue in this story arc, and I know we're getting to it a little early, but we have talked about the Victorian influence of these time periods on America. Now, what's really interesting to me about this is, like you said, this is American mythology. That's what this is. Pure and simple American mythology that's being built. But we still look at it from an oddly Victorian, romanticized, especially during this time period, stance. So that's pretty cool.
I think that's partly because it is, in and of itself, Victorian. I mean, while the Victorian period was occurring in England, where it was pretty much the seat of Victorian period because of Queen Victoria, who just pretty much insinuated herself all over the period.
okay, go right ahead.
We tend to forget that, I think, if I'm not mistaken with my chronology, which I easily could be.
Okay. We don't care.
Yeah, who cares? At this point, just agree. This at the same time period, the West was being tamed. So what's more fascinating to a culture that's been around for hundreds upon hundreds of years with a rich history like that of England that has put its intellectual stamp on this period of history, yet simultaneously over across the pond, we're doing all kinds of crazy, wild, you know, frontier,
right, manifest
big adventure,
destiny.
big
yeah.
wilderness, bigger than life. Things going on in a country that could swallow theirs whole repeatedly.
that is highly true. So
I mean, the unclaimed, unexplored, untouched wilderness of the North American continent that would become the United States, just the parts we hadn't got around to yet,
right,
were bigger than England.
So before we dip into different characters of the time period, because this is of all the issues we've done in this story arc, this is the one that's easiest to point to and say, these characters are from this time period, we can tell you their stories. Like, that's easy for this issue of this comic.
Absolutely. Podcast. Anybody in a 10-gallon hat with a pair of six-shooters at his hips probably is either the Wild West or the Punisher on a mission in Dallas in the 80s.
Mike Zeck's 80s Punisher run. No, you're not wrong. But what are some... Sean, what's your favorite, like, from the time period, comic books, what's your favorite cowboy trope? Like, because there are a ton of them in these comics that are just repeated time and time again. And, of course, you know, there are no original stories. So we look at a lot of these kind of overarching stories as, you know, Persian or, you know, Icarian or Sisyphean. But what are some of your favorite cowboy tropes from cowboy comics or just cowboys
white
in
hat.
General? The white hat.
The white hat. Definitely the white hat. You could always tell the good guys by their white hat.
And never was it more true than in comic books, and also it saved on printing costs. So they went with that every chance they got.
Highly recommended that white hat.
There were a lot of hero cowboys in this issue of this comic. Yeah, they ran out of black ink. They couldn't put the Irish cattle rustler in this one. What about you? Do you have a favorite white hat comic book?
Well, character? Of course, that was also the period where to save money you had characters like Beige Bart.
Right, Beige Bart. Damn it, Cole. Sean, do you have any favorite white hats? Can we stop Cole right now before this goes on for a half hour?
I want to see where Beige Bart goes.
Well, I don't know if you're familiar with the Muggerville 7 universe, but Beige Bart was a cowboy in the Muggerville 7 universe. Brought forward in time, and then oddly back further than he traveled from.
Yeah. Started out in up around Tombstone during the period where all that was going awry.
But he wasn't there.
Yeah, it was near.
Around.
Got a telegraph about it, and a tin type. And then he got pulled forward in time to Muggerville, and then eventually went back to the dinosaur times.
It was sad. It's sad.
I remember that comic.
But he's immortal, so he made it back to modern time. It's a whole thing. You don't want to mess with the Muggerville universe and time travel. It's a mess. It's an absolute mess.
It is.
And we refuse to reboot it, so we just let it run. So, do you have any favorite white hats that you absolutely in comic books just love as characters?
No, because Jonah Hex would actually be my favorite, but he's more of an anti-hero. So
he's kind of a gray hat.
Yeah, he's definitely a gray hat.
Yeah, literally a gray hat.
But still, that's a great example of a character that somehow, through sheer force of DC's will, has survived from being an actual Western comic book character to coexisting with Batman, to coexisting with Superman, to being in the future, to having high-tech weapons. Wasn't there a future Jonah Hex book at one point?
Yes, there was. It was simply called Hex.
That's ridiculous. That's... So, of those characters, Jonah Hex definitely... You know, is the most pro. I think he's probably the most prolific Western character. Like, they would fall into that Western genre that's out there because he had a really long run as a early Western character as well. If I'm not mistaken, like just his own book, like in the Wild West, went on for a really really long time. What about you, Cole? You got any white hats that you love?
The thing is, I remember Jonah Hex very well. I was not a reader of Jonah Hex's books, but he always struck me as one of the more interesting looking characters. And I think that's part of the appeal is he's got that weird little bubblegum lip thing going on and the lazy eye and his old Confederate uniform he refuses to change, even though, when they time bulleted him up to the late 90s, it was very... politically inappropriate for him to dress that way.
It was. Didn't stop him.
He was a very familiar character. I was never a big follower of the genre, but I got a little keen about the history of it after the Crisis on Infinite Earths, because you started seeing both there and in DC's character guide, Who's Who. Everybody was coming out of the woodwork, like Batlash and Nighthawk, Nighthawk or Nightwing, something like that. I think it was Nighthawk, and there were a couple of female characters like Cinnamon and like Lady 45 or something, literally. And of course, over at Marvel, you have their perennial cowboy favorite, the Rawhide Kid, who is probably the most stylish.
Yeah.
Because if I'm not mistaken, he may have had some Kirby origins, which makes him the most reined-in Kirby costume ever.
He didn't have giant horns.
I think the giant buttons on his little, whatever you call that type of like buttons on either side in the middle, or has
the
no
jacket.
Buttons in the middle.
Or the Western shirt.
Well, it's one of those things where it's like sometimes cowboys have it, sometimes admirals, like sea captains.
Didn't the Rocketeer happen?
Oh, yeah. That's what I was casting him out, trying to think of. Yeah, one of those Rocketeer type of things. But he just had the giant buttons there, and I think it was the closest to a Kirby element you were allowed to have.
That art went back to Kirby from the editorial department probably 30 to 35 times. It's like, no.
Well, actually, I stand corrected. It was co-created by Stan Lee and Bob Brown.
Bob Brown.
Whose claim to fame was having a costume, designing a costume that looked like a really reined-in Kirby costume.
See, I told you I was going to talk about this. I'm going to talk about him. My favorite of the White Hats is Clay Harder. First of all, in name alone, his name is Clay Harder. Second of all, he was the original Two-Gun Kid, which later was written out of continuity. So he had a long run as the Two-Gun Kid. Later, that was written out of continuity when they wrote in the new Two-Gun Kid. And the new Two-Gun Kid, we find out, Clay Harder was an imaginary character created for dime store novels that the new Two-Gun Kid was and was inspired to become the Two-Gun Kid. Cool story, bro. Cool background. I love it. Like, that is a cool idea. Like, this guy never really existed. We were telling his story at, you know, and this guy with your, you know, superheroes are real, get over it, bub, read the stories and decided to become a superhero. That's cool. I like that. I like that idea. That's good for me.
I like the way to retrofit. I like when there are clever approaches to retrofitting characters that have otherwise disappeared.
Right, right. And that's what Marvel did, a bunch of those, because they brought back like a lot of kind of Weird West. DC went all in on Weird West when they did the Seven Soldiers of Victory, and then relaunched the Seven Soldiers of Victory with Vigilante, who was an inspired by character, Wild West character, but still, like, just let's get crazy. But so Cole, what about you? You got any tropes that you love from Western comics or Westerns in general?
I think it really comes down to the Western being kind of the one of the more pure forms of comic, because your Western heroes are just, you know, gritty, oftentimes lawmen or just drifters who like Kang and Kung Fu. They go from town to town, meet people, get adventures.
Right.
And, it's about, they're usually just sort of tales of justice prevailing.
Yeah, I think mine dovetails really well into yours, because I don't call them accidental heroes. I call them tangential heroes, because the Wild West is full of guys who just own a ranch, or guys who happen to be sheriffs in a sleepy town that just once in a while we got to break up a bar brawl, but everybody kind of behaves themselves down at the mines, you know? And then, like I said, the Irish cattle rustler rolls into town, and that guy has to become the hero. and it's not accidental, it's just tangential to whatever else he's doing. So he's like, I'm just trying to protect my land, or I'm just trying to do my job, and I've had to become this hero. That's my favorite thing about a Western comic. By far my favorite thing about a Western comic. It prevails in, you know, all Western media, whether it's the TV shows or whether it's the movies. The one that comes to mind immediately is 310 to Yuma, whether it's the original or the remake with Ben Foster being creepy as hell. They're great. They're great. So, what else do we want to talk about with the Wild West guys? Because there's a lot to talk about.
Well, Sean, right before the show, I believe, invoked a certain book that combines two popular genres.
Oh, Cowboys and Aliens.
Exactly. And what's fun with that is you have this title that allows itself not only to combine the two, but also say, you know, a sufficiently advanced culture that comes to Earth in flying saucers could pretty much arrive anytime they want to.
Right. So,
or we've already been here and built the pyramids.
Thank you,
exactly.
Sean.
Why wouldn't they come back during the Wild West? Good point.
Thank you, Sean, for having my back. I appreciate that.
Perhaps they found, Western United States lacking in limestone or other or sandstone with which to build pyramids. So they, I'm not really sure what happened.
So are you versed at all in the actual comic itself, Sean?
A movie and a scan through the comic.
Can you run us through the movie, like what it is? Because I remember possibly seeing it. And I know I flipped through some of the comics, but the thing was, what was weird about this movie getting made is the comics weren't particularly super popular. So somebody got into a pitch room and really sold an idea to make this thing happen.
It's true. Well, number one, as we were talking about tropes earlier, spoiler, by the way, aliens were after gold, which is a trope from the Old West because everybody wanted gold. The old isolated miner to the rich guy who comes into town and wants to get rid of everybody so he can mine the valley.
Like Richard Dix in Blazing Saddles.
Mm-hmm.
Fought Dix. Remember when Richard Dix came in here and tried to take over?
So basically you're saying that Cowboys vs. Aliens is just a remake of Blazing Saddles? Is that...
Blazing Saddle, The Magnificent Seven. There were a couple more about that, too. We got to get rid of these homesteaders so we can mine the valley.
That's right.
Oh, that's so true, yeah.
That's right. So
there's probably a scene in the comic where, you know, one of the aliens is trying to transmit a signal back. And meanwhile, okay, back on the homeworld, they receive a message that roughly translates "ow."
Mm-hmm.
And of course, standing behind him is an alien named Hedley Lamarr.
That's good.
Hedley Lamarr.
For those who don't get that, that's actually a Blazing Saddles reference, which actually references back to an old burlesque dancer.
Yes, Hedley Lamarr.
That's
infamous
fantastic.
For being the first woman on screen in American cinema to be seen topless.
It was supposed to be, it was meant to be an homage, but it turned out to be a lawsuit. So.
Much like the Kerwood Derby for Bullwinkle and Rocky.
That's awesome. That's great. So there's all kinds of like really interesting time out of time stories here as well. And I said I was going to absolutely talk about my favorite one, and I'm going to absolutely talk about my favorite one, and this is not the first time on this show that this has been talked about, but there was a couple issues of West Coast Avengers that were my absolute favorite, and not just because they had Moon Knight in it, or Sean, what was Wonder Man's name? Was it Sean Williams? Sean Williams Scott? That was Stifler. That's not him.
No, yeah, that's Simon.
Simon Williams. You know, in that awful Simon green Williams jumpsuit with the backpack and all of that. But there were a couple issues of the comic where they traveled back in time to the Wild West and had a run-in with all of the white hat cowboys of the time period, and they had to convince Mockingbird to come back with them, all due to, of course, to Kang and Immortus fighting in time, but it's beautiful because it's obvious that there is a lot of love in there for those characters, where you get the Phantom Rider, you get Two Gun Kid, Kid Colt, Rawhide Kid, you get all of those characters in these books that hadn't been touched in a modern fashion yet.
Yeah, I think that's where that is. It pays a wonderful tribute to a piece of Marvel history that had gone largely forgotten at that period.
Right. And I don't know. It just really set well. And keep in mind, we've talked about the banana box before, the banana box of comic books that my dad had, and there were a lot of Dell and Gold Key Westerns in those boxes as well that just really hit it for me in a big way. Made me really happy. But no, they've relaunched the Rawhide excuse me. Wow, that snuck up on me. Sorry, podcast listeners. They've relaunched Batlash. They've relaunched the Rawhide Kid. They've relaunched, of course, Jonah Hex, you know, many times. So there is obviously a lasting appeal here that I kind of want to talk about what that is and why we talk about it. What do you think, Sean? What do you think? You love Westerns, whether they're in comics or they're on TV or they're in movies. What's the lasting appeal of a Western to you?
The ultimate male figure, if you will, not attached to a lot of things, makes his own way, does his own thing. And, you know, as Cole was saying earlier, the ability to just have stuff to explore, stuff to discover, stuff to, you move on to the next town and you're doing, you know, something new and you don't have a lot of, ties. There's that freedom of the Old West.
Right.
That is well spoken.
And that lends itself to a storytale style that allows you to not have to worry a lot about continuity unless you want to. You know, you can go as episodic as you want if you take two or three issues to handle, you know, whatever it might be, whatever damsel in distress tale or town that needs to be freed that's under the yoke of oppression or, you know, minor revolt or whatever it is, and then you just move on to the next one and not to worry about it.
Well, I think, you know, going back to Blazing Saddles, I think that they literally, in the course of most Western comics, your heroes encountered every single type of bad guy from Hedley Lamarr's wish list for henchmen.
Right.
Mexican bandits, Indian agents, it's lawbreakers. Ass kickers. You know, every single one of those was in the mix. So, you know, eventually the good guys encountered every conceivable bad guy or problem that one could find in the taming of the Western United States.
I forgot
plus the gold.
Plus always the gold. I forgot to mention that in those books, when they ran in with, you know, when the West Coast Avengers threw in with Kid Colt and Phantom Rider and Rawhide Kid and all of those guys, they developed, and I really wish they would have done more with this, but they developed a Wild West Masters of Evil. That is, and I want to, if we can get it, I'll send Cole the link so he can grab the picture of that for the post. But there was, it's like the Iron Mask, Hurricane, the Rattler, Red Raven, Dr. Danger, the Master of Magnetism, and the Fat Man with his deadly boomerang.
Wow.
This book, if you have not read them, they are weird and amazing on a really strange level that you kind of have to read to believe that they actually went a lot of the directions that they took, but I'm so glad they did because it's very, very cool. But yeah, I think that the lasting appeal is just the idea of getting out there and exploring and not having ties and being the lonesome cowboy on the range, which is fantastic. So what about Wild West bad guys? Are there any? They're harder to come by because a lot of them weren't. Yeah, a lot of them were in for one or two issues and then out. But are there any anti-heroes or bad guys? I think we need to spend some time on Jonah Hex. I think that's kind of what we need to do.
Yeah, I think Jonah Hex may have been unique, and I'm not familiar enough, but recurring bad guys, because so many of these things were in many ways more serialized than their most comics tend to be.
Right, for sure. So your bad guys were kind of one and dones, whereas your good guys would always prevail. But let's talk about Jonah Hex for a while, because I know Sean loves some Jonah Hex. So we should get down on some Jonah Hex here, because Jonah Hex. Go ahead, Sean.
He wasn't just about the Westerns, though. There was also a magic factor involved with that too. So it went several different ways, which is one of the more reasons I liked it. But if I go too far into that, then we lose the Western aspect of it.
Let's go.
I think that works out fine, because it was also. It strikes me as one of those titles that allowed itself to be more than just a stock Western.
Yeah.
They went super creative with it, because you did have a lot of the episodic Western comics, but in Jonah Hex, you had a period piece that took a few chances that they weren't taking. Now, keep in mind, this was kind of, we were getting into what we referred to as the Dark Ages when we did the eras of actual comic books, where things were getting a little darker, things were getting a little grittier, when they really started developing Jonah Hex. But, like, are you talking about the Mark of the Demon kind of thing with Jonah Hex?
Yeah.
Yeah, talk about that. I'm curious about that, because it separates him from your two-gun kids and your bat lashes.
Oh, it was just unfortunately, I'm terrible with names, so I can't really, but it was,
So are we, it's fine.
That's right.
It's basically just going to go into that it didn't just sit with, the bad guy of the week, this new town. Well, it did do that, but there was always that underlying factor of the magic in the back that made it more interesting. And that's kind of like how I liked it, which is the same reason I like characters such as Constantine.
Yeah, there it is.
Yeah.
I'll always.
But that's getting off topic, too.
Don't worry. We'll have you on for an episode on Constantine at some point. We'll head back around that.
Yeah,
way.
We definitely need to explore John Constantine, because he is rose above his origins.
But Jonah Hex. Oh, go ahead. Go ahead.
No, I was going to say, we did do a 6-issue story arc on Alan Moore, so all bets are off. Go ahead about Jonah Hex, because I'm really curious. I like the character. I don't know enough about him, though. So,
well, they've utilized him a lot more. As you know, they did a movie recently with what's his name? Had Megan Fox in it. Josh Brolin. Wow, he is just getting around the comic book universe, isn't he?
Right. He absolutely is.
It's like, well, let's do Goonies. Now let's hit both DC and Marvel, and hit Marvel a second time at Fox. Of course, they did that movie, and they pulled him into the Legends of Tomorrow for at least 2 episodes.
That was cool.
Which
I
is
really
a CW
like
show.
Yes. Yeah.
I want to see them do some. Well, that being said, I will go back. I want to kind of see them do some kind of team up between Constantine and Jonah Hex for that, since what's his name character does actually exist within the continuity of the CW.
Oh, that's so true.
That would be cool.
But God, Jonah, you're with the comic books, though. You're taking me back decades. I haven't read those comic books.
I'll tell you this story, that I went to see that Jonah Hex movie alone in a theater by myself, and it got panned. It got pretty widely panned, but I actually enjoyed it. I thought it was good for what it was, which was, it wasn't a big giant blockbustery type movie. It was a Western, it was a Western movie. It was good. So, am I wrong in assuming that Jonah Hex, after the war, became a bounty hunter? Is that kind of what happened? Or did he really just go out and just travel around messing stuff up?
Both.
Good answer. I like that. Yeah. He definitely was a bounty hunter for a while. I know that he got his epitomous scar through a tomahawk incident. Like, there's so much weird Jonah Hex lore out there that goes into the time travel and the magical aspects, which I think is a really cool, like I said, it's a really cool aspect of these books that you don't get a lot, which is like the shamanistic unknown that's out there in the Wild West, which of course now we do, but you know, you can play on that. So that's really cool. I like that.
Yeah, and I think therein the arcane elements still fit within the Western genre. They were just sort of incorporating something most did not.
Right, because, you know, if you look at if you're looking at the West through a Victorian lens, as we talked about earlier, you have a giant blank map, and somewhere out there, you know, here be monsters lives that nobody knows what's out there. So you can have him meet with a giant worm, or you can have him encounter some shamanistic voodoo out there in the world, and you can fit it right in because it's undiscovered country. It's not as good as the movie Undiscovered Country, but it's undiscovered country. Oh man, I love this. So do we have any, because there's one in particular that we have to talk about, right? But are there any good time travel stories that you can think of besides my West Coast Avengers time travel story that involved the Wild West?
Wow.
Because I know the one.
I'm trying to think, because I'm sure that the there were often, I think, characters brought forward in time.
Right.
But I'm racking my brain to try to remember if there were anything back in time. And, of course, you know, the crisis allowed them to mix all of the time periods where, you know, I'm surprised they didn't do anything with, like, Anthro and Commandy running around together wearing almost nothing. Two blonde savages.
Well, I think that, you know, if we're going to talk about, like, characters coming through time, the one that we always have to talk about, the one we've talked about in every single iteration of this story arc, has been Batman: The Return of Bruce Wayne. Sean, are you at all familiar with the Batman: The Return of Bruce Wayne?
I am not.
Oh,
I am not.
Thank God, you sweet innocent thing. You should never have to experience.
Now the seed's been planted, and I have to go see what that is, regardless of whether it's terrible or great.
So the idea is that I believe it was at the completion of Final Crisis, Batman in a all-out brawl with Darkseid manages to defeat Darkseid, but in the process gets Omega beamed back to the Neanderthal times, and then has to dig and claw his way back through time to get back to our modern era and become Batman. So he travels through,
as only he can.
Yeah, he's the only one. He's the only one.
So in the age of Anthro and in the Neanderthal Cro-Magnon wars, did Batman have to kill some sort of prehistoric giant bat and hollow out its skull
to wear the giant bat cloak? I don't
because
know.
Because the last thing you want to do if you're Bruce Wayne is get recognized in the unseemly past.
That's true. So just to fill you in, Sean, real quickly, he starts in the Neanderthal times where he has a run-in with Vandal Savage. By the way, this has to just piss Vandal Savage off to no end, because Vandal Savage had to live through time, where Bruce Wayne got to hop through time and make it back. I think
most time travelers must piss him off, especially if he's sitting around being, you know, in the Savage Dome or wherever he hangs out in his off time. There's not really a Savage Dome, but there should be. But you can imagine her, you know, reflecting, having some chamomile, and thinking about the fact that so many, throughout his entire indomitably long life, thousands upon thousands of years that he had to live one day at a time, many people got to just hop in.
Right.
Hey, primitive savage, I'm from your future.
And the funny thing is, every time, like Rip Hunter or Booster Gold or, you know, any of those guys show up, they're like, hey, Vandal's like, hey, can I just catch you? No, we're all full up here. Sorry. Yeah. Can't take you. See you on the other side.
It's a little wonder he turned to evil.
Right.
Because he got these little tantalizing glimpses of the future, talking about your Sisyphusian nature there.
So Sean, he then jumps up and becomes a pilgrim, a witch hunter, proceeds then forward in time to become a pirate, then hops again into his now, what we're talking about now, which is his time as a mass quote-unquote gunfighter, even though he didn't have any guns because of his no-gun policy. But this dovetails back into what you were talking about nicely, because in these books, the Irish, I can say Irish, I'm allowed to because of my lineage, the Irish cattle rustler was actually Vandal Savage, who hires Jonah Hex to kill Batman. So
I was curious, is Batman in that context kind of like the fat guy with the boomerang?
Yes, he is. He might actually
He's like the bat guy with the batarang.
Yeah, I don't think he's particularly fat, but that would be an awesome
crossover chance. No, you see, but he is very bat.
So,
like, why fat? You can bat.
So then he jumps forward into the 20th century after that. But yes, So yes, there was a time period where he was definitely a gunfighter for a while during this.
Well, speaking of the gunfighting Batman, we would be remiss if we don't mention the Elseworlds tale, The Blue, the Gray, and the Bat.
Yes, please talk about it.
Which the core concept was, I guess, Bruce Wayne's parents getting killed, maybe outside Ford's Theater too soon.
Too soon. Besides that, how was the theater?
Well, it would be too soon in the context, because they would have been gunned down years, decades before Lincoln, so that way Bruce Wayne could grow up to become the Civil War era Batman during Lincoln's presidency. So it's this strange sort of Vandal Savage irony if you look at it in a certain convoluted way.
That's right. It's a certain convoluted way, which is all we do, by the way. That's world.
But the idea with the Elseworlds was they would sort of take characters, mostly Batman and Superman, and transplant their origins and histories into different time periods or different circumstances, like Superman Red Sun, where the Kal-El Mobile lands in Soviet Russia instead of Middle America.
Well, let's also not forget, there was I actually read this and I forgot, and I'm glad that I found it again, there was a Elseworlds book called Justice Riders.
That's right.
That featured the entire Justice League as Wild West characters fighting Maxwell Lord, who is the criminal mastermind. But it was... Wonder Woman played a U.S. Marshal. Booster Gold was like a gambler, like a Maverick, who played Maverick?
Like James Garner.
Thank you, James Garner. Wally West was the outlaw. Ted Kord was the inventor. Like, he was the weird Tesla-esque inventor.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. Guy Gardner was a Pinkerton detective. And Hawkman, I think Hawkman had some, like, wings that he developed so that he could fly. And I think Batman appears as Man of Bats in this.
Wow.
Which
Man
is friggin' great. Because we haven't even talked about Man of Bats and Red Robin yet, which is a whole nother thing. It's a whole nother thing. Because we talked about Knight and Squire when we were talking about...
That's so true.
Yeah, Manny Bats. Old Manny Bats over there. Old Manny Batman holding it down in the Wild West. So that was another one that was an awesome Elseworlds that I forgot that even existed. That was just really, really cool. I really liked that one. I don't remember exactly how they folded the Martian Manhunter in, outside of the fact that I think he was kind of just the Martian Manhunter.
Yeah, but Cowboys and Aliens style.
Cowboys and Aliens style. But yeah,
Sean, I something occurred to me though that in the context of all this, as someone familiar with the Western genre and film and other media, do you find any Western notes in modern comics?
Oh, all the time. The gunslinger coming into town to fix things. All the time. That goes back to an older trope of the hero, the wandering hero.
The samurai type trope?
Well, now you're talking about Magnificent Seven versus the Seven Samurai versus Battle Beyond the Stars.
It's getting Akira Sawa in here tonight.
Yeah, they actually named the inhabitants of the planets Akirites in Battle Beyond the Stars.
Really?
I didn't even make that connection.
Yep, the planet was called Akira, and the planet inhabitants were called Akirites or Akiras or something like that.
That's awesome. I did not know that. That's fantastic. Thank you. That's cool. But what about...
I would look it up, though. I could make it off the top of my head.
It's believe me, you're
fine. At this point, we're calling that canon. We'll retcon it. This is a comic book show. We can
do what we want.
We can retcon things.
But so here's a question for both of you. Where does Preacher fall into this category, since we're getting close to the end of the show?
Oh, wow. I think the really seriously whacked out modern Western.
Yeah.
Yeah. I definitely agree with a little bit of a religious play in there.
Yeah, for
sure. Yeah, I'm trying to think of who it's. Aren't there like some sort of like two-fisted holy men in the Western genre somewhere?
I guess the man with no name wasn't a preacher, but I know that there are all kinds of stories about, you know.
Well, there was the right reverend, my boot up your ass.
Well, yeah, I mean, obviously, but.
Yeah, you know. Why do they call you? Oh, that's why they got. I'll see you Sunday morning, Padre.
Yep, I'll be there if I can sit in the pews. I don't know. But yeah, there's a lot of. I think there's a lot of Westerns that are still out there in modern comics. Punisher. Punisher is just the Clint Eastwood anti-hero, anti-establishment, you know, get the job done yourself.
Well, he's also the man who shot Liberty Valance, Bubba McGraw, the Shifty McMillan.
Shifty McMillan? I actually think that's what they called my grandfather.
Shifty McMillan.
I think I am sadly not kidding. My mother's maiden name is McMillan, and I'm pretty sure
my God.
Might have called my grandfather Shifty McMillan. But
I might have been Shifty McMillan.
He was a preacher in Abilene, Texas. Yeah. So
might well have been the right reverend, my boot up your ass, too, depending on how
right
tough things were back then.
Also the right reverend fights with chickens. So. So whatever works, I guess.
I do want to point out, though, that this harkens back on this very network. We briefly had a show we'd try to throw together from time to time called Super Geek Out. And I'm going to see if I can find which episode. One of the things we did on Super Geek Out was say, like, take this and put it somewhere else. And what that invocation in this particular case, the reason this all came back to me was – the challenge for all of the participants on Super Geek Out, which I'm going to bring back in a different format because that was too challenging to do given the players, was put the Fantastic Four in any other comic genre but superhero.
Right.
And I had chosen the Western.
Which is fantastic.
And I figured out a way to give you the tropes of every single one of the members of the Fantastic Four, as well as villains, Doctor Doom, Annihilus, Blastar, and maybe one or two others.
Yes.
And this just brought all that back. I'm like, oh my God.
Well, I mean, that's a good question.
We need the Western Fantastic Four. The only thing more brilliant, in my opinion, than that was Catherine's Harvey comics, where Invisible Girl is Casper.
Yeah, that's good.
And Torch is a little hot stuff. Like, damn it.
So Sean, piggybacking on that, are there any modern comic books? Is there anybody you would love to see in a Western that you haven't seen in a Western yet? Other than
Shifty McMillan.
Other than Shifty McMillan, who's the arch nemesis of what was he? The beige.
Beige Bart.
Beige Bart. Yeah. Other than that, do you have any? Is anything come to mind where you're like, this character would fit great in that genre, and they should definitely look into doing it?
Before I answer that, I have to go back to the idea of the Fantastic Four in Gunsmoke.
Go with it. Run with it.
So we've got the main character, the one played by, was it James Arness? That's, of course, Reed Richards. And Festus is the Thing. And Susan is Miss Kitty.
Okay.
Oh, wow. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. And it's like you really can just plug and play with that. As far as modern characters back in Westerns?
Yeah, like if you could. Like if you could take anybody and write a Western comic about them, what would you want to see?
Well, obviously Spider-Man.
Oh, I like, yeah, go with that. Take that to a place.
Because the fast talking, the wittiness, maybe give him the extra agility so he can, instead of having to, you know, shoot people, he can just jump past them or around them or anything else and trapping them, which also goes back to the ideals of the 50s Westerns where, you know, the good guys really didn't kill anybody. They just kind of captured them and they were sent off to never be heard from again.
Shot guns out of their hands, which is cripplingly painful.
Right.
Yeah, Spider-Man definitely could have been a white hat in a comic easily.
Well, I like that because, and I'm surprised you didn't mention this yourself, he is the web slinger.
Oh, bravo, right there, yes.
And I thought, you are so right on the money with this, that, you know, that the web slinger becomes the ideal gunslinger.
I can't believe that that hasn't been done. Like, I honestly can't believe that somebody has not made that happen, and I don't think they have. Like, nobody's done it. You are dead on the money, Sean. That's amazing. That's cool. Like, I would read
see
that.
You just for 2023 in August, tentative Spider-Man title, Western Spider-Man.
Is that really a thing?
No, I'm making the jest that since the idea is now out.
Come August, it'll be on. You know, it'll be in next month's previews.
Well, they've got to destroy their universe and rebuild it again before that happens. So we've got a little bit of time there. Maybe August, though. You might be right. The way that they wreck and rebuild. Cole, do you have any that you would like to see? I've got mine, which you already know what it is.
Oh,
I don't even know why I'm bothering. Are there any that you
think you're I think in many ways that I'm still reeling from the whole Spider-Man thing.
I know.
It's just I think an interesting take on Superman.
Okay.
Because it is within the Wild West genre, especially in the American West, as it's developing, you see a lot of the values becoming part of the American vernacular that are very much a part of Clark Kent's upbringing. And if a strange visitor from another planet were to land out in the middle of nowhere, it's even easier to fake it than in the 40s or 50s or 80s or whenever you want to play Superman.
Right.
I mean, you know. Plus, imagine the benefits to the Kents.
Sure, of course.
I mean, nobody is going to touch them. And I think it would be interesting to take that to its logical conclusion of, you know, maybe Kal-El's pretty set himself up. I literally see it as sort of the Superman as the anti-hero kind of initially, you know, a kind of come to Jesus story, as it were, where you get a turnaround.
Okay.
In the character, because you start out where, you know, young Cal could set Paul up to be like one of these, you know, Hedy Lamarr types.
Cattle Baron.
Running the town, yeah.
Robert Baron.
See,
imagine, if you will, you know, the most effective cattle rustling is when you can rustle from the five counties away. Two or three head of cattle at a time.
You've just done
something. I think if you, like, you know, if he holds one bull under each arm and then maybe a heifer in between his legs, well, it's awkward as all hell.
But you can
fly. You swoop in at night, you could take the whole herd inside a couple weeks.
Cole.
He could do it all as Super Friends from the 70s and just kind of take a gate and whirl around it real fast and make a cage for him.
God bless you for invoking the Super Friends.
Cole, you've done something for me that's never been done. It hasn't been done in the, what now, 8 years of podcasting together and the 4 years of doing a comic book show. You've just turned me into a very specifically, you know, a very single lane Superman fan. I never thought I would get there, but you got me there. And I'm going to tell you why. Because when you said Superman and you started working through the story, I started thinking that the brilliant thing about Superman is the universality of that character. You could easily have the same Lex Luthor Superman dynamic in the Wild West as you do in the modern times, as you could in medieval times. The spaceship lands on the Kent Ranch. you know, they raised Superman in the right and good ways of, you know, of Kansas and the Kents, but over across the
Kansas Territory, no less.
Oh, thank you. Yes, you're right. Over across the prairie, robber baron Lex Luthor owns a mine and uncovers some green rock that had entrenched itself in the earth millions of years ago off of an asteroid explosion, something, whatever it is. Well, you know, they try to strong arm the Kents into selling their land. Superman, young Clark, puts up a fight, knowing full well what he can do. You know, there's an issue or two in the arc of Superman, kind of doing the preacher thing from that episode of The Preacher where they're marching on the church, you know, where he's basically single-handedly holding off an army of yard boss ranch hands until they bring out the kryptonite, figure out that because he's got it in an amulet around his neck or something that he wears, or in a ring, and he figures out that he can hit him with it and hurt him, and then there's that fight. It's universal, and you brought that to me. I've been struggling with Superman for so long, and you brought it to me, Cole. Thank you.
Oh, very nice.
If nothing comes out of this month, outside of that, I'm a happy comic book fan. For me, it's Moon Knight. It's obviously Moon Knight. It's always Moon Knight. You know, you give him a costume, you give him a weird glider, you know, you give him some moonarangs and a whip, and you're good to go. You know, that's, you know, give him some shamanistic magic that makes him stronger in the full phases of the moon, and have him fighting skinwalkers, and you're done. That's a 5-issue story arc right there, and I'm out.
Does he keep the cape, or does he have a hat?
You know what? He doesn't have a hat. He keeps the cape and cowl. I think he keeps the cape and cowl. We don't go. He's not going to be a cowboy character. He's going to be more a sort of a vigilante style Phantom Rider type character in my mind. I definitely see Superman with that hat on, though. big old red 10-gallon hat.
The symbol of L.
Yes, right there.
We could have like a great big House of L belt buckle.
Oh, even better.
Yeah. Means hope. That means hope where I'm from. Oh, man. We got to wrap this up. Does anybody have any final thoughts on the genre as this comes to a close, as the campfire burns low and we roll out our blankets from our packs and
that's right.
Yeah. And the six string.
And we tell Sean what you do is you put a rope around the camp and the rattlesnakes won't cross it.
That's right.
As far as you know.
Sean, do you have any closing thoughts on cowboys? Why there's a lasting appeal for the Westerns? I know we talked about it a little bit, but just you know, why it's never going to go away? Because I don't think it ever will. There's just something about it.
Same reason the Arthurian won't go away or any of the rest of them. It's just the idea of the archetypical. Still stuck on that word.
Archetypal.
Yes, I can't say it either. Archetypal
alpha male who can travel from town to town with as much freedom as he wants and do whatever he wants and save people and still get all the benefits of being a positive thing without having to have any responsibilities.
Okay, yeah. Cole, what about you? Yeah. What do you think, man?
And also, if you misspell, it's an archetypo.
No.
Archetypo.
I often have to stop myself.
Archetypo was a villain in Muggerville.
Damn it. I was just going to say, I often have to stop myself from venturing into the city limits of Muggerville with these things.
But I have to agree with Sean, because I think the endearing quality of all of these periods is, no matter how much chronological distance, each one will always be the distant past, sometimes the extremely distant past, like, ancient when antediluvian was old kind of past.
Right.
But there's an appeal to the kind of past because we can romanticize the hell out of it, and only the most pedantically scholarly will swoop in to correct us. In which case, they're just a bunch of damn pedants anyway.
That's right.
Shut the hell up.
All right, guys. We're going to wrap this up. Cole, why don't you plug us up and get out of here? And Sean, thank you so much
for
the last-minute assist.
And let me tell you, if you're not familiar with AllCon or Infinicon, Sean and his wife Tia have been a huge part of just the attendee base for many years. Got involved with Catherine and I, very much got involved in the production of Games in Theory, the game show track of AllCon, to the point where Sean is now a seasoned show host.
Nice.
As well as he and Tia both are writers for Games in Theory.
So
so naturally I'm thinking, you know, I try to get as many people as I've had the opportunity to be involved with in these engaging ways on these shows. And I felt kind of remiss that we haven't had Sean on here yet. I just sort of like, well, you don't have to know anything about the genre or the comics because we don't.
Right.
And you outdid yourself.
You did, sir. So with Infinicon getting ready to cusp, like Virgo in the seventh moon, where can people, if people come to Infinicon, which we will plug relentlessly in the coming months, yes, by the way, what shows, do you know what shows you're hosting yet and where people can find you? I know that the rooms will change and they probably haven't been assigned, but, you know, if they come to Infinicon looking for your shows, do you know which?
Yeah, sadly, I've been kind of remiss in getting my preparations. I'm pouring myself into that over the holiday week, and We should have some more solid information by the next time we're all together as a the Hey Kids Comics family coming to you. But there will be more game shows at Infinicon this year than last.
Nice.
I really did not imagine I could squeeze another major convention like AllCon into my schedule. And then the more things I thought about doing for Infinicon last year, the more things I would come up with to add to the mix.
Sure.
We've got a really solid group of Games in Theory that became fully consolidated at AllCon this year. And so fair warning, Sean, I'll be in touch.
Don't worry, you're getting put to work.
That's right.
I want to say the reason why we've so eagerly embraced it is because you and Kat set the best example to follow.
Absolutely.
Well, thank you. We're just silly for this stuff, and we've been at it so many years, and it's just amazing to have so many people come in and be a part of it with us, and it just gets better every year. So we're going to try to pull out the stops. There'll definitely be a Hey Kids Comics show of some kind, I'll have to look. I don't think I carried Don't Lose Your Geek Card over to Infinicon, but honestly, I don't recall. But we'll definitely have some comic book trivia shows. We'll have some Screen Time is back. I've already started working on some new stuff for that. So we've even got a couple who want to do a version of Screen Time for television.
That's fantastic.
Which I think is even more challenging, in my opinion. But at once I recognize there are billions of very quotable aspects of that. I think we'll probably bring back Saturday Night Special, which is a action film quiz show. We premiered Saturday Morning Special at Infinicon last year. We did Saturday Morning and Saturday Night Special at AllCon this year. And I think we're just going to turn the tables and we're going to do a Saturday Night Special.
So when is Infinicon this year?
Infinicon is August
6th and 7th? No, it's later. It's the
week. No, it's a little later in the month. It is, here we are. Infinicon is August 11th through the 13th in Addison, Texas, at the Crown Plaza on Midway, the longest, the hotel that hosted AllCon the longest, and was also the site of Infinicon last year.
There you go. What else is happening at Finicon, Cole? Is there any kind of tour that you
well, you know, if funding should ask, that is the final stop on the Rancor Pit Summer Roadshow, or the Rancor Pit Summer Invasion. That's happened to me. It is the Rancor Pit Roadshow Summer Invasion Tour 2017, the seventh stop of seven stops on the tour. It's going to be, have already been amazing. We only got a few more stops to go. We will, as you're listening to this, this weekend, this Saturday, we'll be at a galaxy called Dallas in Garland, Texas. Eddie Medina and myself, the Rancor Pit and the Rancor Pit Live. Then on July 15th at ArlingCon in Arlington, Texas. And then we'll be wrapping things up at Infinicon 2017, bringing you all kinds of more fun stuff, including the game shows Do You Like the Star Wars? And the Rancor Pit Galactic Games.
There you go. So where can they find information on that?
If you want to find information about conventions coming up all over the great state of Texas, go to Convention Awareness Project Texas at cap-tx.info, because you can't go if you don't know. And, of course, you can find us at Jedi Cole Universe, JediCole.com. You can find the Rancor Pit Live at its new home at DallasOnAir.com. On the first and third Sundays of every month from 12 noon to 1 p.m. Central. And big news, there are some more shows coming from your favorite JCU personalities. We have been invited to expand our presence at DallasOnAir.com. There's going to be some really neat stuff. And a whole different group of people will be producing a new comic book, live comic book show over there, which will be, where I don't know their working title yet, but it will be Hey Kids Comics Presents, and
boom.
Then boom, the title of their show. So, yeah. And I'll be a part of that as an associate producer and occasional fixture on that show as well. And I'm going to go ahead and say it right here officially. A brand new live show on DallasOnAir.com that I'll be producing monthly called Isle of Toys.
Oh, the big announcement is happening. Oh, yes, Sean, we're blessed.
Fantastic.
And I want to put that because if you live in the Dallas-Fort Worth area and you are a collector, a fan of any kind of toys, be it old, you know, tin toys from that you have to go search antique stores and hope to find the holy grails of tin toys, or you know, ugly doll, or is that right? Is that what they're called? And
I think so.
I think that I've got one. It's an ugly doll Batman I found that's kind of fun. You know, pop vinyls, Barbie and Ken, Mask, Transformers, GoBots. If you really want to piss off Jason Dilworth. You know, the most obscure, the most obvious action figures and toys of every kind. I want to talk to you, and because we're going to need guests for this show, because I want to go outside my own wheelhouse as a toy collector and toy fan, and we're also working up the possibility of making a road trip to Paul's Valley, Oklahoma, to tour the Action Figure Museum up there for a few live segments.
There you go. That sounds good. Where can they find everything Jedi Cole Universe?
Oh, yes. Of course, look for the Jedi Cole Universe at JediCole.com. You can write to us at JCUMail@Yahoo.com. And just be sure and put Isle of Toys or I Love Toys or Isle of Toys, depending on how you want to approach that. We'll take Island Shopping Mall Isle, or just simply, like Lucy, I Love Toys.
That's right.
And look for we'll be making some these and more big announcements soon on the @TheJediColeU is our Twitter account. Check out the YouTube channel for the Rancor Pit, because Eddie has meticulously put over 50 episodes plus about a couple of dozen Rancor bits and other little things online for us. We are also about to be embroiled in the Force of July, our annual Rancor Pit celebration of July, with two live shows and a whole slew of recorded shows and segments on the Jedi Cole Universe, and I'm spent.
Well, I've got one last honorable mention that popped up while we were closing the show. Back in, I don't remember what year, so I'm not going to tell you what year, but there were, 94 was the year, where they did all the Elseworlds annuals in DC.
Oh, yes.
Lobo, the Lobo annual for that period was Fistful of Bastiches, Fraggin Train.
Wow.
Fraggin Train. Featuring such anthology titles as Fraggum High, The Lone Fragger, and Taunt Bow. Fistful of Frag, For a Few Frags More, The Good, the Bad, and the Bastich, The Fragnificent Seven.
Of course.
The Man Who Shot the Man. And How the West Was Fragged. So, in closing, That's how sad it can get. Thank you again to Sean, Cole, as always, a pleasure. Buy, collect, and enjoy your comics, because when you're out on the range by the campfire, you might get lonely and need to reach in and find your little Clark Kent out there.